Hey there, podcast listener. Steven here from the podcast you're currently listening to. You ever heard a podcast and think, I can do that? Well, maybe you can, or maybe you can't. Or maybe I can help you get started with it. Hosting is the most expensive cost you'll have in a podcast, and that's why Anchor by Spotify is the easiest way to make a podcast. Really, they have everything you need all in one place. Anchor has tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. With Anchor's hosting, you can distribute your podcast to other listening platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and a whole lot more. And if you think you can do a better job than I, record a podcast right now. There's very low risk involved. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. And best of all, Anchor is free. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today.
Of the battlecruiser Enterprise.
This is Captain James Kirk of the USS Enterprise.
This is Jean-Luc Picard, Captain of the Enterprise.
This is Captain Sisko of the USS Defiant.
My name is Catherine Janeway.
Prune juice, chilled.
Seconds.
No, I got caught reading something real quick.
I was like, wait a minute. By the way, we started recording this podcast at exactly 9 o'clock, which I love. I'm really getting off on that.
Jeez. I think you need to get out more.
Oh, I just love when everything sinks.
It's 9 o'clock.
No, I'm obsessed with when we'll finish because it's all rounded off. All of a sudden at 10 o'clock, I'm like, all right, shut up, we're done.
Yeah, I know. At 10 o'clock, it'll be like, yeah, and that's it for the away team this week. Goodbye.
We're not even done. Shut up, Steve. We're done.
We're only in act three. Tune in next week, motherfucker.
I said good day. Accidentally get to 10:01. Well, now we got to keep talking for another 59 minutes, see?
Oh, shit. All right. Welcome, everybody, to The Away Team, a series that recaps each episode of Star Trek in canonical order. We discuss all the tropes, Mary Sue moments, and blatant racism within the franchise. That doesn't mean we don't love it, but we love it enough to accept it and call out the silliness. I'm Stephen Vargas.
I'm Adam Riley. This is also the episode we're going to do today is a perfect episode that you can bring up to your friends that complain about new Star Trek and say that Star Trek is so political these days.
Oh, right.
It's a little more subtle. It's actually less subtle in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
It's still a little bit more subtle than new. But still, it's there, you know, so.
Yeah, I know. When they say like, oh, yeah, Star Trek is so woke now. Is it, though?
Is it?
Is it?
Kind of feel like that's been the running theme since the 60s there, champ.
The fuck up. You may wanna watch some of them while they're still while Enterprise is still available on Netflix and TOS.
You know what I think it is too is that people today, and let's be honest, usually my age or a little younger, they think that the 60s, the original series, didn't have anything special about it because to them they don't realize how iconic it was to have a black woman as a bridge officer.
Well, to have even have a, you know, multiracial. I mean, you have
multiracial, Asian in the front, even a Russian one too. That was a big deal, you know. And to them, they don't have the context of it.
Yeah.
So they're like, it's just a simple fucking. There's nothing controversial at all.
In fact, it could have been more diverse. You know, not like a CW show.
Because I remember I was watching. A couple of the older episodes, which are good. I just have a hard time getting into them because just, you know, before my time. But and I'll sit here and go, these are kind of, you know, pretty tame. But then I'll go, well, wait a minute. Let me put myself in the mindset of the 60s. like what was going on in the 60s. And I'm like, okay, this isn't a very tame show at all.
Right.
They're calling out a lot of shit here. And they were pretty fucking blatant about it too. Remember that episode with the dudes that were half black, half white?
Right.
That was a pretty badass episode, bro. It was campy and silly, but it was a badass episode. But before we talk about all that other bullshit, I think we need to discuss Lower Decks.
Yes.
So it's very important.
So this episode, an embarrassment of Duplers, or is it Duplers? Was it Duplers?
Yeah, Duplers.
Adam wasn't crazy about this episode.
Me neither.
No, I said Adam wasn't crazy about that episode.
I wasn't. Yeah, I was. I thought you said I wasn't. Sorry.
They all can't be winners, folks.
I liked part of the episode, and I kind of was like, eh, with some of the, you know, and that's the thing with Star Trek is you got multiple stories going on, you know, and the whole multiplying dude thing, I just thought was lame. I just thought it was stupid and more annoying than anything else.
Yeah, that's true.
The problem was is I broke out of the story for me, and I was like, how could anyone exist this way? This doesn't make sense. Like, this is so stupid. Everything else was fine. I liked the whole them going to the party. It was a very simple episode. Like, were they
O'Connor being the DJ?
Yeah, that was funny. It was still funny. I was still laughing and stuff. I just everything. So the one of the stories happens on the ship. The other one happens on the space station, and then they kind of meet at the end. But everything that was going on the ship was just kind of whatever to me. I was just waiting for it to get back to the station.
Yeah.
But we did have a little bit of character development from the engineer and the fucking medic. I don't remember those names. Sorry.
Yeah, from Rutherford and what's her name? Oh, Tendi.
Tendi, yeah. So that was cool. I did enjoy that because that was a little deeper. And but everything that was going around.
But it was nice that they actually went back to the idea that he still didn't remember a lot, because it seemed like he kind of forgot. Yeah, I kind of forgot that he did too. And then I was like, oh yeah, that's right. They kind of reset his brain, and so now he's I'd love the fact that the little model ship had a real warp core.
Yeah,
like
everything on it was real. Had real phasers.
Like, well, if we eject the warp core, open the panel. I'm like, that's a model. Why does the model have a warp core? It can blow up.
How much did that model cost?
Exactly, bro. And then we get another thing into Mariner's past with that. What was that? I always forget the race. Was it the? I can't remember the race, but where, you know, he tried to set her up with all the shampoo datas.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember the race either.
Yeah, that was like, it's like, yeah.
Are there any lores in here? There might be one or two lores.
I know. It's like, are there any lores in here? There might be
one
or two.
There were a couple. It was a bunch of little statues of Data, and just one or two of them, the Data was smiling.
Yeah.
And I was like, that attention to detail on that was so good.
Because you knew those people that people watching it, we're going to screenshot that and look for the lores, and it was just those subtle little hints that they were lores, which was great. I like in when they were doing the model of when they gave up on the model of the ship, and then they said, "Oh yeah, I got the new model for DS9, and it comes with an Ezri and a Jadzia."
I was rolling on that. That's the cool thing about, to me, in my humble opinion, Lower Decks is an amazing show. So even when an episode comes where there's an aspect of it I don't like, I still have a lot of fun watching the episode.
Right.
Like, I would watch it again and still enjoy it. You know what I mean? It's just that fucking Dupler thing was dumb.
Yeah.
And really all it was a plot point. It was just so the other two were running around because they were trying to avoid it. But
well, you're
they could have did something.
You're not in the party. We helped Riker in the battle of the... Like, nope, doesn't matter. But I liked in the thing where they mentioned Captain Shelby. I was like, yeah. I was like, oh shit! I go, now we know she's a captain now, which would make sense that she
There's
would be
so like. It's so funny because I was thinking about the other day, and my wife was like, "So how's that new Star Trek show, the animated one?" I said, "It's pretty good." She goes, "Do you think I'd like it?" And I go, "I don't know, because it's so heavy on references. Like, I don't know if you would like it if you didn't know what was the references, because it's like 90% of the humor.
Right.
I guess you could still like it. It's still, you know, kind of a silly adventure. You just really would be confused sometimes. And not like the Packlet thing. Like, they don't explain the Packlets and how they are or anything. It's just like, they're Packlets.
Yeah, you know? And, you know, I mean, they kind of say what Starfleet always thought of them as being idiots. It's weird, though, because, like, you would probably enjoy its zaniness and maybe some of the humor, but some of the real comedy that makes it hilarious, you wouldn't get.
Yeah, you have to be a lifetime Star Trek fan and have seen all of it.
To me,
you know?
Yeah, to me, like, this, to me, Lower Decks is really for the fans.
Yeah.
You know, that's what
I agree. I think because I've wanted to, my kids haven't really watched Star Trek and stuff. And I've been like, I was thinking, oh, Lower Decks might be good. But I'm like, nah, they're just going to be confused. But I think that Prodigy is going to be a nice entrance point. Because a few of my kids have wanted to watch it. But then, you know, like any kid nowadays, they just watch a random thing on Netflix and they're like, I have no idea what's going on.
Right.
You know, and it's kind of difficult for them to watch like the first season of TNG because it's fucking dated to them. They don't, they're like, this looks old, bro. You know, so I think
O'Connor's in there. He's the DJ. What? He's not even in Starfleet. This is outrageous.
I love how they know who O'Connor is.
And then he's holding that same thing that he was holding in TNG, like as a DJ, where he's holding that, like,
God.
I was like, what the hell?
I saw it was a tweet, and it was just it's this Twitter account that they just show random images from Star Trek. And it's another thing. Like, if you didn't watch Star Trek, you have no fucking idea what was going on. But this one was two pictures side by side. And it was O'Connor holding that fucking, like, device. But remember when he held it on his shoulder?
Right.
And then it was a picture of Spock when he was on the bus when he checked that dude that was playing the radio too loud. I laughed way too loud. Like, it was so funny.
Oh, shit. It's hilarious with that, because the fact that, like, there were still so many little moments in this episode that you were cracking up about.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I mean, the O'Connor thing really just kind of was like, I was like, did she say? Then when they showed the picture of, they show him being the DJ, I was like, oh, shit, they put O'Connor in. I was like, nice.
And then the whole fucking Spock plus Kirk with the heart around it at the bar. I was like, Jesus.
I was like, oh, somebody doing a little acknowledging of the fanfic there.
Yeah. That shit was great. And the bar had a lot of background stuff in it that I can't really recall right now. But it was a great episode. It's just that one thing. It was just the first, I think the only reason it stood out for me was because it was the first time this season where I was kind of like, you know.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was the most of the beginning of the episode was that. And I was just like, I don't care about this random idiot. Please, please. But yeah, definitely a good show. Suggest it. Tell your friends. But we need to talk about the real meat of the fucking episode, okay? Talking about Enterprise episode Cogenitor. This is episode 22 of season 2, Make a Wish. First aired April 30th, 2003.
You begin next Wednesday. An alien race gives a whole new meaning to close encounters of the third kind.
Maybe we could sleep together.
They need three to mate.
I'm pretty familiar with how it works with two sexes, but...
Oh, well, I have pictures.
A provocative all-new Enterprise. Cogenitor. You begin next Wednesday at 8, 7 Central.
And Trip gets into some major shit.
Fucking checked at the end of this episode hard. 676 of 806 releases in all. Enterprise encounters the Visians, a race that includes a third gender of cogenitors who are treated as second-class citizens.
By the way, this is Star Trek woke, just so you people know, like, old Trek woke.
This is if they made this same exact episode in Discovery right now, there would be a large enough group of people that would fucking scream bloody murder and claim that they're ruining Star Trek.
Right.
When it was an Enterprise episode. And there was a TNG episode that was very similar to this too, but it was it wasn't a third gender, it was a genderless. I remember Riker was having some romantic feelings or something. As
hey,
he does.
It's Hollywood. We're all gay once in a while.
Yeah, fuck it. We don't ask questions here, baby.
I love that in Tropic Thunder. It's like, yeah, man, it's Hollywood. We're all gay once in a while.
Tropic Thunder is another movie that if I hear someone hasn't seen, I get upset. Like, I'm like, you need to see Tropic Thunder.
Yeah, yeah, I get visually upset. Yeah.
The Enterprise NX-01 is excited to be studying a hypergiant star when it notices an alien ship 20,000 kilometers closer in to it than they can get. They then make first contact with the Visians. Their captain, Drennic, is quite friendly and offers Jonathan Archer an upgrade to study the star in return for a visit to their ship. Relieve the whole crew. I'm surprised they didn't have to Paul say something sly, because these people were all for sharing their technology. Hmm. Like, they were doing kind of a trade thing. I think they wanted our like art. Like, they gave them Shakespeare and shit.
Right.
Yeah. You know? But I was so waiting for DePaul to go, ugh, you shouldn't just give it to them. relieving
at least
the whole,
sell it to them.
Right. Like, tell them you have it and then don't give it to them. That's what we did. relieving the whole crew, who has by this time had many difficult first contacts. Drennic says meeting other cultures is one of their primary goals. Archer makes a plan for dinner. It is nice, too, that they put in a race, finally, that has kind of a similar temperament to Archer. Because up till now, every time Archer makes first contact with somebody, they either are trying to steal something from them, ignore them, or tell them to fuck off.
Yeah, I know. It was nice. I was kind of... But see, that's the thing. Is Star Trek has used that trope so many times that I was waiting. It's like, okay, what kind of shit are they going to do? What are they going to do? In fact, it was actually...
Where's the backstab?
Yeah, and the backstab came from Archer's side.
Yeah.
Yeah,
this is a really well written episode. Not just what they're like the main story, but just everything, the way it plays out. And it's very well written. I was impressed with this one. And funny thing is, I didn't really remember it. I remembered they had a third gender episode, but I didn't remember how it played out. I certainly didn't remember that Trip's a fucking idiot. I knew that.
I was gonna say we knew that already. We just didn't know how much of an idiot he was.
Act one. Drennic and Archer have dinner in Archer's dining room. Drennic explains his ship is made of trinesium, which is what enables him to be in that far. Further, one of their stratopods has twice the shielding and can go further. Archer is impressed at the technology, and Drennic invites him to explore the inner workings of the star, an opportunity Archer gladly accepts, looking forward to improving the already friendly relations with the Visians. Meanwhile, in the mess hall, the two crews mingle. Trip Tucker is treating Tristana, right? Yeah, Tristana.
Sure.
And Velo to some ice cream. Excuse me. Malcolm Reed has a conversation with the Visian chief engineer and his wife, Kala. In the interest of mingling, Reed and Tucker swap places. Tucker is happy to meet the engineer and hopes to visit his engineering room. They are sitting with another Visian, though Tucker is surprised that the Visian barely responds to his greeting. Kala oddly interjects and refers to the Visian as it, saying the Visian does not have a name. Tucker is confused, and Kala explains that the Visian is their cogenitor, apparently helping her and her husband have a child. Her husband continues the conversation, pointing out he might need an inoculation since his engine room emits Omicron radiation. Yeah, the dude was kind of like, he wasn't being a dick, but you could tell he noticed the awkwardness and just changed the subject.
Yeah.
Like, he was like, oh, you know, you put it back to something that Trip was more comfortable talking about. Tucker goes to Dr. Phlox for the injection and also asks him about the cogenitors. Phlox isn't surprised and tells Tucker it's a third gender. I almost said degenitor. he begins to get excited to go into all the details when Tucker asks a simple question, but then Tucker stops himself, preferring to keep it a mystery. Phlox suggests Tucker keep an open mind, reminding him he's out here to meet other species. This is now the first time Tucker is warned.
Right.
Okay? This isn't the last. It's the first time. Moving on. The next day in the Stratopod, which is basically like a shuttle, right, but it just looks a little different. Archer is amazed to be so deep, deep inside the star.
Yeah,
he is. He's also surprised as Drennic adds a poignant quote from William Shakespeare, having read several pieces of literature that the previous night provided by Hoshi Sato. They notice ionized hydrogen. They didn't put this in here, but it seems like the Visigans have photographic memories.
Yeah.
So, and they read incredibly quick, so you could tell that they're pretty intelligent. They notice ionized hydrogen that is generating magnetic currents as they descend into the chromosphere. Meanwhile, Tucker visits the Visigan ship's engine room. The engineer explains they compress antimatter before deuterium. Deuterium. Sure, that's fine. Is injected into the warp core. Tucker is impressed that they don't need magnetic confinement of their antimatter stream. During this, he also asks about the cogenitor. The engineer explains that they make up about 3% of the Visigan population and are normally assigned to a male-female couple during the procreation process.
I don't understand why nobody told Trip the human equivalent would be a surrogate.
Yeah. Phlox say that they provide an enzyme or something?
Yeah.
That's required.
Yeah.
For procreation.
To Trip would be like, well, just think of it in your world, they're surrogates.
Well, Trip even said that the mating process wasn't the issue that he was hung up on. It was how they treated the cogenitor. That was the issue that he was having. Not that it justifies what he did, but that was the issue. This is a good episode too, because it's kind of a grayer, like, what would you do? You know what I mean? Kind of thing. Because I kind of thought about it too, towards the end, and we'll talk about it when we get there.
Will we though?
He says it's the perfect ratio for the percentage of cogenitors. The engineer moves on to the plasma converters, but Tucker continues asking about the cogenitor. He soon learns that they are not treated fairly, with no education provided and serving only one purpose in life. The language the engineer uses suggests it is treated almost like a pet. He changes the subject by saying that plasma converter polymer is composed of nearly 200 naturally occurring elements when humans know of only 92, and Tucker says he's keeping an open mind. You could also tell that the engineer, he wasn't uncomfortable, but he was just like, why do you keep asking about the cogen? Because it seems like in their society, they're an afterthought. They're an end to its means. They don't think about them much, you know, so it was kind of awkward to have such a long conversation about them. Although that's kind of weird too, because you're talking to whatever. Everyone's an idiot. Act two. Archer packs for 3 days, observing the star with the Visians. T'Pol's a bit concerned at the lengthy visit, but Archer's too excited to hear her. He wants her to provide more literature recommendations for the Visians. T'Pol then goes, oh, no, wait. It's so funny because he goes, all right.
So annoyed with that.
Yeah, he said, I want you to provide more literature. He says, and you're in charge. And she goes, of the reading or the ship? And I was like, nice. Or the movies, because he said to give him some movies too. T'Pol then goes to give Tucker in engineering the task of downloading the movie database to the Visians. Oh, there was a part, I think it was before in the ship, when Archer was in the ship, and I thought it was kind of a cool quote where he was talking about the technology, and Archer was like, wow, there's a lot of my people would be really impressed with this technology. And then the guy said that a lot of my people would be impressed with Hamlet or whatever.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I don't know. That kind of hit me a little bit. I was like, you know, this there's more things to think about than technology and stuff. You know what I mean? I thought that was kind of cool, but whatever. I'm being sappy and shit.
Being a bitch.
Being a little bitch. T'Pol then goes to give Tucker in engineering the task of downloading the movie data. Did she pass this off to him?
Yeah.
Because I don't remember Archer saying, go ask Tucker to do it.
Yeah. It's called delegation.
Delegating. There you go. Yeah. She's a perfect leader because she don't work. Tucker asked T'Pol about the cogenitors, concerned about the way they're treated. She knows trigender reproduction is not uncommon, but doesn't understand Tucker's concern. He says it's a question of human rights, prompting T'Pol to remind him they are not human and to try to keep his opinions to himself since Archer wants a good relationship with them. This is now the second time that Tucker has been warned. Keep that in mind. Two times. From the two more seasoned and experienced people on the ship when it comes to dealing with other cultures.
That's true.
Just saying. He's going to all the right people to ask questions, but he's refusing to listen to them.
Refusing to listen.
Jackass.
Jackass. I'm just being your hype man right here.
I mean, he is, you know, I mean, Texas and shit.
Yeah, because Texans like to get in other people's business a lot. Yeah,
Texas isn't really everybody's fucking best friend right now. So, yeah. Tucker can't let it go, though. Shocking. He goes to Fox.
You know what
next.
I should do? We should set up a website that will have people giving their opinions about how wrong these people are.
Stop it. He goes to Fox Nest next and asks if he knows the mental capacity of the cogenitor, wanting to see if it's comparable to the male and female. Fox didn't do that since there's no reason to. Tucker suggests he performs a scan himself. I'm counting this as another soft warning because this entire conversation, Fox was looking at him like he's just being annoying.
You could just see Fox rolling his eyes every time.
Yeah, like Tucker was like, can I scan it? And Fox was like, I guess. You know, like,
get out.
Yeah, fuck off. I don't want to be involved in this no more.
I already got in trouble with the captain in the last episode. I don't need to get in trouble with him again.
Yeah, Phlox be getting in trouble too. But he the difference with Phlox and Trip though is Phlox has his principles and they you know what I mean? Right. That's a little bit better. It's easier than just being an idiot. You know? Because I remember the episode.
He has principles. It's better than just being an idiot.
I remember the episode where Phlox was that one where Archer wanted them to save. There were like two races on the planet. We watched it already.
Oh, yeah.
One of them was dying of a genetic thing.
Yeah, and he wouldn't.
And Archer was like, save them. He's like, I can't. I'm not morally. I can't play God.
Right, because you're interfering with the natural progression.
I really liked that episode because he stood for what was right.
And the thing was T'Pol was on his side too. Like, you can't interfere.
Well, because as much as Archer likes to talk shit about Trip being impulsive, Archer's the same way. He thinks a little bit more through it, but he's pretty brash too. If you pull his heartstrings, he'll do some silly shit.
But the thing too is that with Archer, he has T'Pol. And he can listen.
And he listens to her. Yeah.
And he listens to his,
unlike,
you know,
Trip's dumbass.
Yeah. Unlike Trip, was like a, you know, I mean, to be honest, if you were to categorize Trip, you would categorize Trip as those like anti-vax, those people that just don't listen to reason. Like you will just still, and he'll still come up with something. Yeah, but. I think, you know, or what about isms, or what about?
Trip is a good guy because every time he makes a mistake, he's doing what he thinks is right. You know what I mean? It's almost like what we were talking about in the previous podcast about President Bush. Like, he thought he was doing what was right for everybody. It just wasn't.
But the thing was, everybody was telling him not to get involved, and he couldn't let it go, which is the problem. Which is the problem with that is that it's
dumbass.
Yeah, it's like a can't.
And not only that. Like I say, you make the argument. He wasn't just asking regular people. He was asking experts compared to him.
And you could tell it was people that he respected their opinion but didn't listen to their opinion.
Like he low-key knew it wasn't right.
Right.
And he was like, let me see if I can find – but then he just – I don't know. He decided not to listen because we all do that. Like I feel like if someone's going to do something big, like if I was about to make a big decision, I'm going to talk – maybe I'll talk to Steve or something and be like, this is what I'm going to do. What do you think? You know what I mean? And
be like, "Yo, dumbass, better not."
Nine times out of ten, you're looking for someone to go, "Yeah, that's right," because you already think you're right. Now, if you're not a piece of shit or a child, if someone you trust goes right, if someone you trust goes, "No, man, that's not the way," you're gonna go, "Fuck, really?" And you're gonna listen. You know what I mean? Trip doesn't do that part. He only does the first part, which seems like a waste of time. If you're not going to listen to people, don't bother going to ask them.
Right.
Dumb. He was just looking for confirmation bias.
Yeah. Now, in this, I think this part fell very, very quickly from the wayside. Like, I wanted to see the aftermath of this.
I needed to see the cheeks.
Yeah. I needed to know how this turned out, because this was just
hot too.
Oh yeah, but this was just like, what happened? Like, it very early on did it, and they were never heard from again. Happened very early on in this episode.
This is like the C storyline,
which should have been the B storyline.
Meanwhile, Reed continues to talk to Vilo in the mess hall, hoping to change her mind about their bland smelling food. Oh yeah, it seemed to be a thing with this species that their food is very pungent in odor.
Yeah. They consider smell more important than the taste.
Right. Which was cool. I like when they throw in little details like that.
Well, Vilo, then you better smell these nuts.
He got them. Vilo seems to be taking an interest in Reed directly, feeding him the cheese and sharing the same piece.
I'm surprised he didn't whip it out right there when she was real. In his mind, he's probably going, "Oh my God, this is happening.
She asks to visit the armory later, and Reed jokingly but slyly responds with the old Earth expression, "I'll show you mine if you show me yours." I had to pause it. I was laughing so hard.
Me too. I started rolling. I was rolling so hard, my animals looked at me like, "Bro, like, calm the fuck down." Like,
did you seriously just do that? You are a fucking 13-year-old.
"I'll show you mine if you show me yours."
and for some weird reason, she was like, "Okay."
Yeah, and out of nowhere, Trip popped and high-fived Reed.
Yeah. Back on the Stratopod, Archer and Drennic trade facts about their history, with Archer hoping that Drennic's people will make an exception to their short distance traveling customs to visit Earth. They descend into the photosphere. After a while, Archer asks to take a turn at the helm, despite the five spatial axes. Drennic allows him to pilot. Archer successfully does so, avoiding a flare that gives off a great deal of magnetic flux.
By the way, if you've watched this episode and you think that Drennic looks and sounds familiar, that's because he's from TNG with Tomalak.
Yeah.
You wouldn't recognize him underneath without all that Romulan makeup.
He had a major career change in about 100 years.
I loved
him. It was nice to see him. I always thought he was a good actor.
I always liked him in All Good Things. Does the Federation approve? No. I'm interested already.
I'm not interested. I liked that one part because he sounded like a fucking pouty child. I forget what episode it was. And he's like, "You don't even apologize." And then Picard's like, "If an apology will do, then I offer it," which I love it because that was even childish because he didn't really. And then he's like, then immediately Tomalak's like, "Well, it doesn't." I was like, "Bitch, you're the one that brought it up."
But one of the great things is his name. I love just the way that name's Tomalak. Like, you know, especially when Picard said it, goes, "Tomalak."
Yeah, it's a good sounding name, especially with a British accent.
Exactly.
They go heavy with the CK at the end.
Yeah. Tomalak.
Whoa. That's what his girls call him. You feel me? On the Vizian ship, Tucker is shown the engineers, or the engines. Let's focus up. Operations some more, watching as the rotation of the quantum inverters triples the antimatter flux. You know, they leave out a lot of stuff about the cogenitor and stuff, but they put all this fucking techno babble into this damn thing. Tucker also inquires about the engineer's living space, and he invites Tucker to dinner later. Yeah, really dumb. He goes, "Oh, my living space is really small, so like if I could see yours and tell my captain about
Because he tells him, because he says that like his quarters are, you know, that he goes that we have small quarters, and he says, oh, well, you know, we have over my wife and I, and he, because, but he uses it as a lure because he's like, oh, well, it must be tough for you and your wife. And he's like, oh, we have our own. He goes, she'll make you dinner. And he's like, you got a kitchen, you know? Yeah. And
he was doing that. He was doing that flexing his poor thing. Like right. it's just weird, but he wants to get in there so he can scan the cogenitor, which honestly at that point I forgot. Where are we at?
They invite Tucker to dinner later.
Oh yeah, Tucker to dinner later. Jokingly saying they'll try not to prepare anything too pungent. There he carefully tries their food and learns that the taste isn't as surprising as the smell. Yeah, it looked like it was pungent. Like he was kind of like, oh shit.
It's funny too because like they bring Trip to try his food and I go, Trip hates trying new shit. He always gives that face of like, oh.
And he's a steak and potatoes kind of guy too. Very basic shit.
If it ain't covered in barbecue sauce, I don't want it.
I'm right there with him. Like, I'll try new things, but there ain't nothing like a good plate of fucking corned beef and cabbage. Like, just real simple. You know, we don't need to get crazy. For Vizians, the smell is more important. Yes, we already know. Tucker then asks if the cogenitor would join them. And so Kala goes to get it. So it's kind of crazy. Well, it's not kind of crazy, but it's interesting to note that he's like, hey, and she's like, why?
Yeah.
Like it's like she doesn't – it's to her, it's almost like if you're at someone's house and you're eating dinner and you're like, hey, you should bring the dog to the table.
Right.
Someone's going to go, why do you want me to bring my dog? Yeah. Actually, most people are probably like, oh, yay. You know, but yeah, it's – the cogenitor is an afterthought. They don't really care.
The thing that
it's not like in a disrespectful way though. It just looks weird. It's just a different thing, you know.
The thing with Trip in this one is that the way Trip is acting is actually borderline kind of creepy.
Yeah.
Like his obsession with yours is kind of like, why are you so obsessed? Like, are you because it's pregnant, you figure, oh, okay, I can't get it pregnant? Like it's
uncomfortable and creepy because it's technically asking about their sexual habits.
Right.
And even Phlox mentioned that to him the first time he warned him when he was like, a lot of species don't feel comfortable talking about their sexual habits. And he's like, well, yeah, but I'm talking about the cogenitor procreation. So it's like, and which falls under that, you know, he's, That's a fourth warning. I'm throwing that in there. It was part of the first warning, but still. Tucker really wants to perform a discrete neural scan, which he does. So I missed that. I think I looked away when he did the scan. It was so slick, I didn't even see it.
Yeah.
Which he does so and brings it to Phlox later. He confirms the cogenitor is just as mentally capable as the male and the female. Tucker now has a problem. He had a problem.
He's always had a problem, yeah.
Had a problem season one, episode one. Later, Tucker goes back to the Vizian engine room and under the protest of getting some food in their mess hall, visits the cogenitor and hands it a pad, explaining it'll teach it how to read. Yeah, same way if you tap the word, it will say what it is.
Yeah.
He put Hooked on Phonics 23rd century edition on that bitch.
22nd century.
But... 22nd, excuse me. Act 3. Tucker sits the cogenitor down and teaches it how to use the pad to read. Hesitating, the cogenitor warns Tucker he shouldn't even be there and that he doesn't understand. Tucker tries to make the cogenitor understand that it is just as smart as the males and females and is not as important in the reproductive process. And it's just as important in the reproductive process, yet has no rights and doesn't get to raise the child. So there's an interesting juxtaposition going on here, okay, where Tucker's doing all this, but he's convincing the cogenitor that the cogenitor is being oppressed.
Right.
The cogenitor was perfectly fine. And this is the gray area.
He's trying to be the white savior.
Right. And this is the gray area because this has happened in human history where you have a group of people who have been treated poorly for so long that that's just their reality. They don't know that it shouldn't be that way. And then usually Europeans come and or something, and somebody tells them, hey, you're being oppressed, and convinces them of it. And it really depends on your perspective on if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Because it depends, because you, and we'll see here, it was a bad thing for this person. You know, so I don't know. It's a really thought provoking episode. I don't know. That's why I keep stopping and explaining things. Because I'm a genius and I'm trying to explain it all. Okay.
Because I'm trying to tell you you're being oppressed.
Right. I'm Caucasian. Therefore,
ergo,
I'm going to let you know what's wrong. Convinced, it takes the pad and starts to use it and smiles for the first time. I don't know why that was written in there. Tucker goes back the next day, and surprisingly, the cogenitor has a great reading proficiency and expresses interest in visiting the oceans and mountains in the text. Tucker is relieved and leaves to go back to engineering, as he was under the pretense of being somewhere else. So he's sneaking around the ship. As he leaves, the cogenitor claims its name, Charles, after Tucker. So it names itself after Trip, whose full name is Charles.
Well, yeah, she said she would name it Trip, and then he says, actually, my name is Charles.
Yeah.
Charles Trip Tucker.
Right, Trip's just a nickname.
Trip is a nickname I use for my primetime detective series, Trip Tucker. Texas Ranger.
Texans in the South are the only places where you hear someone have like full nicknames like that. It makes no sense to their name, and gang members in California. But it's just odd. Like, where did Trip come from? Like, you know?
Yeah, this is a loco, this is a vato loco, and this is octopus.
Octopus. This is Smokey and his little brother, Little Smokey, okay?
This is a loco, loca, and all the little locuses.
The locuses. And there's always a joker in there. Yeah, this is Baby Joker. Always,
yeah, Baby Joker. And this is Baby Joker. And then this is Crazy Joker. And this is Batman funny. Joker.
I remember when I was learning some names from some kids I knew in school, they all had those nicknames. And I go, not a lot of originality going on in
no.
your camp. Is it? They go, no, but it works. I'm like, all right.
And this is Dr. Strange. And
that's taken. Stop it. Archer continues to have fun piloting the Stratopod. Oh, by the way, I was watching the original Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire. And when Jameson was trying to come up with the name of Spider-Man, the dude says Doctor Strange.
Oh, right.
Goes, but it's taken.
Yeah.
So there's a Doctor Strange in his universe too?
Yeah.
The new Spider-Man coming out.
It's all connected.
I can't wait, dude. A lot of people are saying that the Doctor Strange that helps Spider-Man isn't actually Doctor Strange.
I've heard that one already.
It's the Khan dude.
Yeah.
And I go, that's a little too soon, because this is like the first movie of this generation of movies. Like, yeah. I kind of feel like they're not going to do it that quick.
No.
But who knows? You never know. Archer continues to have fun piloting the Stratopod under Drennic's direction while he monitors the measurements taken. They're having a whole fucking bromance over here. They don't have any idea what's going on with Trip or that Reed's about to get laid. They don't know anything about this.
Like, you expect to see, like, you know, their hands in each other's lap. Like, you know, that it's like the way they're acting with each other. Like, bro, like, you guys need a room? Is Trip going to get jealous? That's what I want to know.
I saw today, you know that movie 1917? I haven't seen it yet.
I saw it.
I heard it was a really good
movie. It is a really good movie.
But there's a part in it, which you will know because you have seen it, where one of the guys dies and dies in the arms of his friend or whatever.
Right.
And the very common thing, and I'm not saying you were doing it, you were just kidding, but the very common thing of people going, oh, they must have been gay for each other. And I was like, oh, like, whatever. And then a few hours later, someone said it about Captain America and Bucky in Civil War. Oh, they're gay lovers. I'm like, can men not have love for each other without being gay?
Yeah, that's –
Do you not think that men can form – like heterosexual men can form strong bonds with each other?
Yeah. I know. It's this whole – yeah, it's like, oh, they're gay. It's like going – is this the 1950s? Have we gone back to the 60s? Like, where it's like, oh, they're gay for each other. It's like, no, there is a certain brotherhood.
I honestly feel like men can form better bonds with other men than women can.
Oh, yeah.
To be honest, because women...
Women get catty
all,
for shit.
Not all, but women, a lot of times in those female groups, they get catty or they get competitive about things. Yeah. And men usually, it's ride or die for life, bro. Yeah. Like, Steve and I have had fucking big-ass arguments. Usually him arguing with me, I'm fucking along for the ride. You know what I mean? Because Steve has issues, you know. Always yelling at motherfuckers. No, I'm just kidding. We've had arguments about shit. And we're still friends, yeah. You know. If we were women, wouldn't be friends. No. I guarantee it. And I know that sounds sexist, but it's also true. You know, so I don't know where you want to take that. So where the fuck am I?
You're at home in Arizona.
What?
Am I?
If they come 10,000 meters closer to the star, a particle count of the photosphere can be collected. Soon, they come across another flare, and Drennic instructs Archer to avoid it. He tries a couple maneuvers, like going 40 degrees to port, but realizes he can't avoid it. To Drennic's surprise, he decides to head right through it. Comparing it to a wave in the ocean, Archer gives back the controls, since he obviously made a move Drennic wouldn't have. Yeah, he says, if you can't go around it, go through it. And right. I'm like, this isn't water, though. Like, it's like, all right. But, I mean, they didn't really have a choice. So, it was whatever. Meanwhile, Reed...
They didn't show the part where Drennic goes and slaps Archer's hands away from the control. He's like, I'm going to take care of it now.
Should have never gave you this fucking... Meanwhile, Reed...
They should have never let you get to space.
Meanwhile, Reed continues to interact with Vilo. In, I keep wanting to call her Violet, Vilo in the armory. While the Visians have a bit more advanced weapons overall, they power their hand weapons the same way. No, I don't want to look back at my memories. OneDrive, calm down. soon in a more secluded section. So I have Windows 11 right now.
Oh, yeah.
So the tones that it makes are kind of new to me. So they'll take my attention. I'll go, huh? And I'll be looking at my screen. And it's usually something stupid. Vilo directly states her intentions to spend intimate time with Reed.
I'm surprised she didn't look away, then turn back to him, and he's already naked.
Right. Awkwardly, he states the custom of having dinner first, but apparently on Vizia, it's the opposite. I'm going to go to Vizia for my vacation.
Seriously, at least you get that shit out of the way.
She's cute, too. And she's a lot taller than Reed. Death by Snoo Snoo, bro, for real. Yeah, but good for Reed. And it's insinuated that he tapped that ass. Yeah. It's not shown, obviously, but...
But I wanted to see it.
I wanted to see all of it.
Her legs up in the air and him just plowing away at her.
I think that's the last scene we see.
Yeah, that's the last.
Which is kind of what you were talking about. It just kind of fell off. It would have been cool even just to see him kind of see her off the ship with a little sly smile or something. Yeah,
that awkward morning after kind of thing. Yeah. You know?
Hair's all tousled and shit.
He comes out, his uniform's all shredded. Like it's
right.
All...
Jesus.
You have people looking at him, and then out of nowhere, Trip walks by, high fives him. That no other words said, but that's just
right.
That would have been perfect, like random moments of just Trip coming out of nowhere and high fiving him. You know, like
stuff like that I could see happening on Lower Decks.
Yes.
Just real stupid shit. Later, Tucker brings an excited Charles to the Enterprise. Charles being the cogenitor. While avoiding the other Visians, Charles is shown the transporter, engineering, and a movie the day the Earth stood still in Tucker's quarters. They then talk about the movie and a bit of human history over a game of Go. By the way, I forgot about that game, and Go is fun. It's a fun board game. I might pick that up. I think Go and Othello aren't really that much different. I liked both of those games. Whatever. Surprisingly, Charles beats Tucker. He's been undefeated for the last 2 years. That's his claim to fame. He's really good at Go. Tucker's actions catch up to him, And T'Pol is informed that Tucker is not welcome on the visiting ship. She dressed him the fuck down.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I know,
like,
dude.
It reminded me that she's the senior officer. Because they usually talk as equals, but technically...
he outranks her.
And especially the captain's not on the on the ship.
She's in charge.
So he got dressed... he probably had a hard on the whole fucking time. I did. Yeah, so...
are you going to spank me, T'Pol?
She confronts Tucker in the Situation Room, forcing him to describe what they've been doing and pointing out that Charles's education is not his business. Furthermore, he's undermining Archer's desire to have a successful first contact. Tucker objects to Charles's treatment and to T'Pol's priorities. He was very honest with what was going on, but you could tell that he was kind of like, you know, in a professional way, telling her to fuck off.
Yeah.
Which I was kind of surprised. This was like the whole episode. I'm like, this dude's being dumb. He's meddling. When this happened, I was kind of like, what the fuck is he doing? You know, like it was just so stupid. He always wants to die on a hill and he has no business on the fucking hill.
he has no idea what the hill is.
Right. He simplifies everything. That's the problem. He's not thinking about it in broad terms. It's just one person. That's all he's thinking about, you know?
Yeah.
It's like how a child looks at things. While in engineering, Tucker sees that Charles has sneaked back onto the Enterprise, explaining that Kala and her husband won't help it read, visit, or explore. Tucker says that they will, given time, but Charles instead asks to stay on Enterprise.
Seeking asylum.
Archer and Drennic wrap up their journey and finally get back to their ships. Archer soon learns about the situation and has a talk one-on-one with Tucker. Tucker insists he did what Archer would do, but Archer dismisses. Oh, this was funny because it was Archer and T'Pol were in the room, being the two senior officers or whatever. And once he said, "I just did what you would do," he said, "T'Pol, can you excuse us
for a minute?"
I was like, "Ooh, this motherfucker is super in trouble." Because he's not just going to dress you down professionally. He's going to talk to you like he's your homie, telling you fucking up, dude.
Right.
I was like, fuck. Tucker insists he did with da-da-da, but Archer dismisses that wholeheartedly, as encouraging Charles like he did is defying their culture. It's a lot different than sending them books, which is, by the way, something the Visigans asked for, which was the point that he was making. Archer now has to clean this up. He goes to Charles and explains it's not their place to decide what is within Charles's rights in Visigan culture. Charles then asks for asylum, understanding that it will never be able to have a decent life among its own people. Now we have an issue, because in Star Trek's the same as like America on Earth. When someone asks for asylum, it has to be taken seriously.
Yeah.
You know, so now we've thrown a wrench into it. That reminded me of a TNG episode where Data was talking to that little girl on the fucking CB radio, basically.
Oh, yeah. And where Picard, he was acting like, all brand new.
He was acting super brand new. I was like, what the fuck? And Picard was he was being tripped. And Picard was like, just stop talking to her. And then when Picard was in the room, she distinctly said, please help me.
Yeah.
And he goes,
ugh. Because now it has a voice. Now it has a voice.
He says, your voice in the dark. He said something Picardish, like very poignant, you know. But it reminded me of that. I keep fucking reminiscing and then I lose my place.
You're in the new paragraph. Archer now has to talk.
Oh yeah, okay. Archer now has to have a talk with Drennic, the engineer, and Kala. Drennic states that their quick friendship and the hope that the situation can be resolved peacefully. Archer's position, however, is that the asylum must be given serious consideration, especially when the individual views its treatment to be unfair. The engineer objects to the whole situation, and Kala says that they are also being treated unfairly. Now, at first, I thought those two were being kind of dicks, but then I realized they can't have their child without the cogenitor. So, okay, that's why they're being a little bit more emotional.
And plus, it's their culture. This is the way it is.
It's like you're basically saying, hey, the way you live your life is dog shit.
Right.
You know, so I kind of it was I think it wasn't clicking at first because we don't have three genders. So I was just kind of like, oh, why are there? Oh, yeah, I get it. So Archer objects to the way they talk about Charles, but receives objection to his characterization of their culture. Drennick allows Archer time to make a decision, and later Archer decides he can't grant asylum. Drennick was really patient, and I was kind of impressed with that because he was like, look, we're not leaving anytime soon. Take your time.
Yeah.
You know, just
he was,
please.
He was really like, you know, I don't want to fuck this up. So, you know, we're not leaving anytime soon.
I think Enterprise would have lost against their ship.
Oh, yeah.
Because the whole episode, they were talking about how advanced they were.
But not even that. It was just the first contact. Like,
right.
Like Drennick was like very like, oh, I like these humans. We can,
right.
We can learn a lot from each other.
Misunderstanding.
Yeah.
Like, let's, you know. Because, well, that was the thing, too, is that technologically they were ahead, but they seemed very impressed with our, like, literature and stuff.
Yeah.
So I think we had a leg up in that. So there was a mutual thing going on.
Yeah.
Even though the two ships depart with the best wishes and their captains hoping that the incident will not interfere with the relation between Earth and Vissa. By the way, at this point, Charles, or the Cogenitor, went back to its original ship, just in case you missed that part. I said it, and then I started talking about something else. The situation gets a lot less bright when Archer learns that Charles committed suicide. An evident result of the independence developed out of Tucker's teaching. Calling Tucker to his ready room, Archer severely reprimands him for his interference, as it has not only resulted in Charles's death, but has also denied the Vizian couple the chance to have a child for a long while. Tucker is deeply shocked and admits it's his fault, but Archer continues. One thing they didn't put in here, he says, it's my fault. And Archer said, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
He didn't soften it at all.
He didn't sugarcoat it at all.
Which he should, you know.
Yeah.
But Archer continues reminding him that despite all his time on Enterprise, he still compares other cultures to Earth standards and interferes without thinking first. Archer is upset that first contact with the Vizians led to this conclusion, and Tucker begins to realize the consequences his actions can cause. He didn't even fucking give him a punishment. He just turned his back on him. And honestly, that's worse for Trip.
Yeah, because it's your homie doing that.
It's like, homie, and he's like, get the fuck away from me.
Right. And the fact that he was like going, you know.
And I think finding out you caused someone to commit suicide is probably, punishment enough. There's no reason to really add to it.
Here's the dialogue from that. They go, I was just told that the Vizian congenitor died. What? How? Suicide, Trip. She killed herself. Well, that can't be. Why? It's my fault. I'm responsible. You're damn right you are. It's not just her. There's a child who won't be conceived because of this, at least for a long time. It's time you learn the way to weigh the possible repercussions of your actions. You've always been impulsive. Maybe this will teach you a lesson. I understand. Do you? I'm not sure you do. You knew you had no business interfering with those people, but you just couldn't let it alone. You thought you were doing the right thing. I might agree if this was Florida or Singapore, but it's not, is it? We're in deep space and a person is dead. A person who'd still be alive if we hadn't made first contact. I guess I haven't been very successful at getting through to you. If I had, you would have thought a lot harder before doing what you did. And then he says, you're not responsible. And then Archer's like, you're damn right. You know, like,
no, I think he didn't say anything.
He didn't say anything after that. He just turned around. Yeah.
Because the sad thing is that he is technically not responsible. He's going to take the weight of it because he's responsible for Trip.
Yeah.
And this isn't the first fucking time Trip's did this. I think it's the third time that he's interfered with a culture. The other times were funny.
Right.
You know, it was kind of just some stupid shit happened or whatever. But this time it's not so fucking funny. And I noticed after this episode, Trip doesn't do silly shit anymore.
Yeah.
He's still outspoken and he'll speak his piece, but he doesn't fuck things up anymore. Because it's like, you can't keep being that fucking country bumpkin asshole out here. You know, it's you're being a jackass. And I was reminded of the fucking – when he went down to the planet with T'Pol and that chick was taking the breathing mask on and off the kid, and he starts screaming at
them. Oh, right, yeah.
It's like, you have no fucking idea what's happening. Yeah. Like, I put myself in that situation, and yeah, I would probably be like, what the fuck is going on? But I would then look at DePaul and go, hey, what the fuck's going on over there? And then she would explain to me what's going on.
Yeah.
You can't keep just assuming you know everything, you know? And this was a really powerful episode for real. And I think one of the best of the season when it comes to like deepness, like trying to teach you something. And it was technically quote unquote woke. But whatever.
Well, if you want to end at 10 o'clock, we have 3 minutes. So you better.
Shit. No, I'm just kidding. I don't give a fuck about all that.
FJ Raver previously.
This is all controlled chaos, my friend. There's nothing. It doesn't matter when we stop. Production notes. FJ Rio previously played Enrique Muñez in the Star Trek Deep Space Nine episodes Starship Down, Hard Time, and The Ship, as well as Joe Legg in Voyager Repentance. Who was he in the show? I forget.
He is the engineer, the Vizian engineer. I thought I recognized him. I was like, oh, the guy looks familiar.
Yeah.
But that's always in Star Trek. You're like, oh, that dude looks familiar. He's got to be in another episode.
Yeah. Andreas Katsoulis played Tomalak in the Star Trek The Next Generation episodes, The Enemy, The Defector, Future Imperfect, and All Good Things. I thought he was in more episodes, to be honest. This episode marks his first appearance on Star Trek. Before his death. Oh, I didn't know he passed away.
Yeah.
Before his death in 2006.
Yeah, I saw that too. I was like, oh, he died? Oh, I was like, oh, shit.
Laura Interval previously played Erin Hansen, the mother of Seven of Nine, in the Star Trek Voyager 2-part episode Dark Frontier. I think we saw her for like 2 seconds in that episode, to be honest.
Yeah, she was the one that got it doing that Marvin Gaye thing with Malcolm.
Yeah.
Let's Marvin Gaye and get it on.
A little Anita, and then just set this party off right. Oh, this episode contains the second mention of photonic weapons, the first being in Sleeping Dogs, where they were employed by the Klingons, a technology employed by the Vizians. Enterprise was equipped with photonic torpedoes only a few episodes later in The Expanse, suggesting that the Vizians may have shared the technology with the Enterprise crew, or that Starfleet had developed the technology based on the crew's observations of either the Klingons or the Vizians. Yeah, that makes sense. Little fucking canon going on.
Well, yeah, you also got to remember too, in Star Trek, when they in the TV series and the first couple of movies of TNG, they had photon torpedoes until I think First Contact. Then they got quantum torpedoes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The piano music played in his quarters by Tucker for the cogenitor is an excerpt from the first movement of Mozart's Sonata in C, K-545. Beautiful piece of music, by the way. I love classical music. I can never remember the names of these. They should have gave them slicker names because I can never remember. When Tucker chooses a film to show to the cogenitor, the computer shows among the available science fiction films The Bride of Kotika, the B movie that inspired Tom Paris for his hollow novel The Adventures of Captain Proton, especially for the chapter Bride of Kotika. Oh shit, and a little fucking little slickness in there. Other films on the list include Dixon Hill, we know what that is, and The Black Orchid, a reference to Captain Picard's favorite gumshoe, as well as Mr. Willis of Ohio and Celestial Navigation, the names of episodes of the political drama The West Wing. Oh, that one was for Steve. They called him up, you know?
Yeah, I looked, when I saw that, I go, Mr. Willis of Ohio, Celestial Navigation, those titles sound familiar. And then I was like, yeah, they were on The West Wing.
The West Wing's that old?
Yeah, The West Wing started in 99.
No shit.
Yeah.
I could have sworn it was newer than that.
No, that's crazy. Yeah, the first season was in 1999.
I guess that makes sense because I was watching the first season with you and it looked 90s.
Yeah, because the third season, that's when the third season, that's when 9/11 happened. So the third season was 2001.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. The more you know.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun.
Thanks, LeVar Burton. It's not even on that. The Stratopod's ability was later seen in a Klingon bird of prey, which was viewed withstanding the outer edge of a star's corona. Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, TNG Redemption 2, and DS9's Shadow and Symbols. Well, you know what I like about the show of Klingon technology is they always seem a little bit more advanced in anything that would have to do with being in a battle.
Yeah.
So their weapons are a little bit better. Their shielding is a little bit better. And it makes sense, you know, because that's what they're doing. So, but everything else is trash. Like, put a mattress on your fucking bed. It's like, what the fuck? A Federation/Starfleet-built Stratos pod, as Captain Drennic would have suggested to Captain Archer, was not developed until 2369, when Dr. Beverly Crusher used the Ferengi-invented metaphasic shielding technology on a Starfleet shuttlecraft to enter the corona of a star in TNG Suspicions. Fuck! There's a lot of fucking connecting thread in this episode. Like, I forgot about that episode. The Ferengi invented it? What the fuck? How much did it cost? That's what I want to know.
Well, that was post. That was post Last Outpost, you know.
Yeah, right. They're a little bit more interesting. The book Star Trek 101, page 260, by Terry J. Erdman and Paula M. Block, lists this episode as one of the 10 essential episodes from Star Trek Enterprise. I don't think anyone would argue that point.
No, because it actually has character movement in there. Like, that's a significant point of a character.
Right. And it's not just, you know, and we all love the episodes where it's very action-y and it's just like, you know, but the deeper episodes are definitely something that I think Star Trek is very much known for, you know, taking something from actual, the real world and translating it into Star Trek. But, you know, I don't know. I thought it was dope. you know, whatever.
I don't know. I thought it was dope.
Manny Coto cited this as one of two episodes from the first two seasons of Star Trek Enterprise that he especially enjoyed. The other such episode was Regeneration. So let's quickly. We got to talk for another 56 minutes now because it's like, no, I'm just kidding. I want to see what the next episode is. We're about to end this fucking season.
Yeah.
Oh, Regeneration.
Yeah,
is the
I was
next
gonna
episode.
Say I think Regeneration is the next episode. Yeah.
Oh, I love this episode. Teaser, real quick. A scientific team, or not the teaser, but the whatever the fuck is it's called before it. The commercial. A scientific team in the Arctic discovers a crashed derelict ship and two cybernetic alien bodies from over 100 years earlier. When the aliens revive themselves, they kidnap the scientists, hijack their vessel, and move out into space where Enterprise must confront them. The Borg, motherfucker. This is the Borg episode. I love this. I love this episode because when I saw the commercial for it back in 2003, I kind of rolled my eyes.
Yeah.
Because I was like, it doesn't make any sense. But they make it make so much sense.
Because it stems from First Contact.
First Contact.
It is First Contact. Yeah,
First Contact. I was so fucking impressed with how they connected everything together on this. It's one of my favorite
episodes. It was the Marvel Universe before the Marvel Universe.
Everything's fucking connected. Almost said corrected. But yeah, so that's the next one. So definitely, this one won't be as heavy, and you know, won't end in a fucking suicide. Jesus Christ!
Or will it?
I totally forgot about that, and I was like, oh shit! Like, this is heavy, heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't do suicide, kids. It's not nice. Right?
Yeah.
You can DM me if you're having a problem. We'll talk about it.
And don't do drugs, kids. And don't buy drugs, because be rich and famous, and then they will give it to you for free.
That's right. That's the true trick, you know. And you've deserved it at that point because you earned so much money.
Right.
You know? Thanks for tuning in. I don't know why, but I instinctively put a Sour Patch watermelon in my mouth. Delicious, by the way. We want to ditch the ads and be independent. We can only do that with your support. If you would like to donate to make this podcast and all the shows in the Lazy Geeks Network self-sustaining, you can go to lazygeeks.com and click on the donate button. It's literally that easy. I mean, you got to add money and shit too.
Right.
But that's the first step, you know.
But it's just easy to get there. Like, it's just super easy to get there. And if you can't help us out monetarily, you can share the show with your buddies and rate the show on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, whatever the fuck it's called now. Give us that 5 stars, the reviews saying, you know what, this shit will change your life, you know, that kind of shit. And also, if you are gonna comment, aside from, you know, reviewing us, let us know, do you think Archer did enough to reprimand Trip?
Ooh, that's a good question.
You know, if you're gonna comment, if you're gonna leave a review, say like, you know, love this show. By the way, I think Archer should have dick slapped Trip for causing that chick to commit suicide. Let us know in those comments. I really would like to know. And if you don't have Apple Podcasts, you don't want to leave it on there, go to thelazygeeks.com, click on this episode and comment there. I want to see what, if you guys have any thoughts about, do you think Archer should have done more to Trip, or was just telling him he's responsible for her committing suicide enough?
Yeah, do that. It's fucking heavy, dude. Got me thinking now. Fuck. You can check out all the other shows available on the Lazy Geeks Network. You can check out our flagship podcast, The Lazy Geeks, and Steve's new podcast, The Gen Xer Podcast. All are available wherever you got this show from.
And
because that's how that works.
Yeah, exactly. It's all connected, ladies and gentlemen. And if you want to be part of the show, just hit us up with comments, questions, or ideas for future episodes. If you want us to do like maybe a list show of like, hey, what are some of your personal favorites? Don't make it really hard like in all of Trek, because that would be a really long episode. And if we had to cut it down to like the top 5, that would be really hard.
I mean, technically you can do whatever you want. We'll just pick whatever we like. Right. So, you know, you can put all of sci-fi if you want. I'm just going to pull what I want. So,
I know
honest.
You guys,
I like to be honest.
I know you guys said sci-fi, but I picked 5 rom-coms that I thought would be.
Right. I know you guys said sci-fi, but I put Fiddler on the Roof on there. I just think like, what?
I know you said sci-fi, but I put Scarface because,
right. I know you said sci-fi, but I actually put Hamlet on there. So I feel it's just connected. You know?
I know you guys said sci-fi, but I just had to put Julia Childs in there, and because there was this roast she made, and it was the shit. So you know,
I know you guys said sci-fi, but I actually put the Muppet Babies, that cartoon from the 90s. I just thought that was something poignant. We really need to discuss it. I'd be sitting there like, what the fuck? I would talk about the Muppet movies.
You can do that by catching us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all under @TheLazyGeeks, or email us theawaytea@thelazygeeks.com. So that is it for us this week. Until next time, I'm Stephen Vargas.
I'm Adam Riley.
Two to beam up.